You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
It's time for Make the Call, a weekly discussion on the top Wisconsin sports stories of the week. You can listen to the show anytime on the free Civic Media app. Download it now on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. Now, it's time for Make the Call, a Civic Media sports production.
Indeed, another Saturday morning here on Make the Call, Civic Media's sports show on the Civic Media Sports Network. I'm Jimmy Cuskith. We are joined in our first segment here for 7 at 7 with our full roundtable. That would be Greg Gunderson in Park Falls. Greg, how's it going?
Quite well. Yourself?
Staying warm. It is cold out there. Conrad in Green Bay. How's it going, Conrad?
I was going to say, it is so cold out, I don't even want to walk outside.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to going outside today. Parker in Madison, how's it going?
I was
going to
say, I'm keeping my head above the water, but obviously it's ice right now.
It is ice. Good luck punching through it because it is freezing out there. It's segment number one. We do our 7 at 7. It's 7 in the morning. So we go through our top 7 sports stories of the week, and we will start with number 7. And the question is, how old do you think you could be and play a professional sport? This, of course, coming on the heels of the news that Philip Rivers, who was in Madden in 2005, is now with the Indianapolis Colts after all of their injuries. He literally goes from coaching high school football in his mid-40s and is now on an NFL roster. It is an amazing story of being 44, which is older than me, and going out to play professional sports. I'll give you my thought on this in a second. We're going to start with the youngest member of this panel, and that is Parker in Madison. Parker.
Well, I guess this is a prediction. And also, I want to point out, what professional sport are we talking about? I think that I could be a professional cornhole player until I die.
There's a very, very loose definition of professional athlete when we talk about
Hold on, though. We've picked a thread. My morning guy here in Park Falls, his son is a professional cornhole player. Full stop. That is, I mean, Joel, we should have Joel on sometime. He knows he's a Vikings fan, so I don't know if we want him here, but I bet he'd love to weigh in on the definition of a professional cornhole player. His son, Blake, is actually quite accomplished. He's a ringer. You don't play against Blake. It's kind of cool. Anyway, sorry. My bad.
Hey, you might as well tell us how old do you think you could be before pro sports are out of the question.
I'm going to be that cynical, contrarian jerk. You can be 15 years old, like that soccer player over in England. How old can you be? I have no idea. There's some 58-year-old college player, so maybe he could speak to it. He got NIL money from Asper Cream, so I'd call that successful. Not a pro, though, but he's getting paid. Tom Sillo, 58 years old. Shout out to Tom. So there you go, 58.
58 years old. Conrad.
You know, I'm going to say you can be in your 60s, and that's if you go over to PBA, the professional bowling.
Oh, you got to have the
Weber
mustache.
Is one of the best. I think he played into his late 50s.
You got to have the mustache, so though.
we have covered bowling, professional cornhole, and of course being in your 60s or almost in your 60s and playing college football. I love it. I am 40 years old. I will say this. There is no chance I could be a professional athlete at this age. But seeing Philip Rivers at 44 is an inspiration to old people like myself. All right. Number 6, top 7 at 7. Did we ever really appreciate what Tucker Kraft meant to the Green Bay Packers? This is a Greg Gunderson special if I ever saw one. Greg, you might as well take it away here.
I think the answer on this one is going to be pretty clear, even if you haven't thought about it before. Let me save you the Googling. Tucker Kraft, as we sit here today on the, in the second week of December, Tucker Kraft is second in yards. He's second in targets. He's second in receptions, and all three categories are currently led by Romeo Doubs. So I'm not going to say he's still the clear number one, but he's first in yards after the catch over Josh Jacobs, who gets all the checkdowns in the world. And then there's a massive drop off. So the fit within the scheme still has not been replaced. When Tucker went down, he had 44 targets. This was 5 or 6 weeks ago now. The next highest target count for a tight end in Green Bay, Musgrave, 22. We've just finally hit the halfway point to even getting the volume out there to another tight end. It's very clear that Tucker Kraft is irreplaceable, as if we didn't know, but the stats are there.
Parker, Conrad, either of you have a thought on this?
Ditto.
I was just going to say, after watching these couple last games, you know, without Tucker Kraft and watching Luke Musgrave, it's no comparison. Tucker Kraft is a beast. The run after catch, I missed that. And look, Luke Musgrave gets like a, you know, a 2 yard pass, and then it's like, all right, well, he's down there. But I don't know. I just miss him. I miss him a lot.
We miss Yak is what we miss. We miss Yak. Yes. Yards after catch. Number five in the top seven at seven. And this is brought to you in part by Division III college football playoffs happening today. One of those games is right here in River Falls, Wisconsin, where I ask, how cold is too cold to play football? The forecasted high, according to the National Weather Service of the Twin Cities, is -1 with a wind chill of -20 as River Falls will take on Wheaton. Conrad, how cold is too cold?
That right there, that sounds terrible. I don't even know, how do you catch the ball in that weather? How do you make a tackle without hurting yourself so bad? I would say cancel the game, maybe reschedule it. That yeah.
Gray, how about you?
You want to see Derrick Henry look like his prime self, even this year where he's been pretty non-existent? Get him in that kind of cold. My answer to this, there is no bad weather, only bad clothing. We just got to prepare better than you. No cold is too cold. Ice bowl, man. What are we talking about here?
I'm just picturing everybody out there in like the giant puffy fleece jackets running around. Parker, how about you?
I absolutely love winter football. I'm not sure that there is too cold for football, but maybe however cold it was in Kansas City the time that Mahomes' helmet literally like broke. Maybe that was too cold. I'll give him that.
I think this is that kind of cold. Which chills to the -20s. It's crazy. I just look at the kickoff at -1 is the forecasted high temperature during this game. And that's at 2 in the afternoon in River Falls later today. That is crazy. Number four.
Ice bowl was 14 below at kickoff. Ice bowl 14 below.
Yeah, that does not sound fun. We just had a blizzard game like 2 weeks ago in college football. So, all right, let's move on. Number four in the top 7 at 7. That is this. The Packers defeated the Bears in their most recent game. What is the most important takeaway from that victory? Let's go to Parker.
I'm actually going to go to the Bears route here and say that the Bears are pretty legit. I think we were all a little skeptical. I know that they had started to get a little bit more attention and really win over some hearts. But I wasn't all that sure. That second half really proved who they were. And that Caleb Williams, I hate to say this, Chicago, you might actually have a quarterback.
Let's go to Conrad.
Christian Watson. I love this man now. He you don't see him dropping too many passes anymore, and I love it. You know, whatever he did during his time off, I think it worked, because every time I see him run a route, I get excited, and I just love watching this man play football.
How about Gray?
Christian Watson actually is much like the Bears, come to think of it. We knew there'd be improvement, but this is leagues beyond what anybody expected. You know, the Ben Johnson experiment is clearly a resounding success. Not only do you have a quarterback, I think you have a team. When you've got Caleb Williams pulling off some of the throws he's making, still got to iron out some of the boneheaded decisions, but he's so young. He's a second-year quarterback, so you can only really ask so much. I'm both super glad and super sad that the Bears are good again. My takeaway from that game, momentum matters. The Bears owned that third quarter, came out with a plan. Ben Johnson clearly saw something, or some coordinator did, and the Packers can't expose themselves like that again. Future opponents won't let that fly.
Well, and they'll see the Bears again a week from tonight, so they have to play Chicago a week from tonight, Denver tomorrow, Bears a week from tonight, Ravens 2 weeks from tonight, then the Vikings in the last game of the NFL regular season. Going to shift back to the Packers talk here in just a bit, but let's move to number three in the top 7 at 7. This is a Bucks question, and no, we're not going to sit here and talk about will Giannis not, in terms of getting traded. Got to ask this, though, because the Bucks went out of their way to make a massive investment in a complimentary piece to Giannis, and that is in Miles Turner. So we are somewhere between a quarter and a third of the way through the regular season. Is Miles Turner worth the money? Let's start with Barker.
I mean, for how much money you spent on him, you shouldn't be getting 12 points a game. You would think that he'd be getting, I don't know, maybe at least 15. Like, I don't think that they did the right thing in getting him. I don't think that the money has turned out well. I do not blame the Bucks at all for doing this, and there are no regrets for getting him.
Conrad.
I mean, to start, I don't think he was worth the money even before the season. I mean, he didn't average that many points or assists or whatever last year. Like, yeah, he can space the floor a little bit, but his 3-point percentage is down. He's not worth the money. It's completely not. I just think he needs to play better for $108 million over 4 years.
Cray.
When it comes to regression like that, for me, the next question, the follow-up question is, what's the timing? And in this case, it's really hard to ignore that the timing on this regression is right after a big contract got signed. And I immediately get nervous. He's young enough that there's still hope, but you might have an attitude issue when the contract hits big. And it's not the first money he's ever made, and he's performed well after making money. But I don't know. Anytime I see a big cash, I worry about coasting from there on.
Number two in the top seven at seven. We've talked all year about how great Badgers football was at 4-8 this year. But now the basketball team has been beat up in a couple of high-profile games, including on Wednesday against Nebraska. Nebraska ball got a 30-point win, one of the biggest losses for the Badgers in nearly a quarter century. So we got to ask, are the Badgers any good this year in men's hoops? Gray, back to you.
I don't know. It feels like we're on shaky ground considering what expectations were. And I've got a football problem. It suddenly feels like we're reducing expectations. And I immediately think of the Fickell situation. It's like, all right, are the goalposts going to move or are we going to get it done? There's still time for option B, but we've been getting used to option A.
Conrad.
You know, I'm thinking they're going to be in the middle of the pack all year. I don't know when they'll be ranked again. They need to get some wins, but the defense is not playing well at all. And this is a problem. Like last year, we had John Blackwell and John Tajay, but when one of them went off, the other one didn't. And that's what we saw with this last game. Nick Boyd played decent enough. John Blackwell shot like 1 for 24 or something like that. Just really bad. I just want them all to play well, orchestrated basketball, but they just don't have an identity yet.
Parker.
Yeah, I'm with you, Conrad. I'm not sure that they've got their identity quite yet either. And absolutely right. The defense is practically non-existent and it needs to obviously exist in order to have any chance in college basketball. I am hopeful. However, I think they could be a very middle of the pack team. Maybe they do hit their stride at the right time, though, and they can have a really nice finish to the season going into March.
Well, that's been kind of the ML for Badgers hoops. They sort of peak later in the year, and well, we'll see once they get further into Big Ten play starting next month. Number one in our top seven at seven, as always during the NFL season, it is our prediction for the upcoming Packers game. They take on the Broncos tomorrow afternoon with a 3:25 kickoff, and then they will play a pair of Saturday primetime games the rest of the way. So let's focus in on tomorrow's game when they take on the Broncos. What is your prediction? And we're going to go right back to you, Parker.
The Broncos have a way of winning close games. That's kind of been their MO. They get behind, and then all of a sudden, somehow, Bo Nix does a little magic, and they've got a win under their belt. The Packers are somebody who tends to get ahead early on in games, and then kind of goes off the deep end of the second half. They let teams come back in. I'm not sure how that's going to bode for them against the Broncos. I'm going to say the Broncos actually win this game close.
Conrad.
You know, the devil magic the Chiefs had last year went to the Broncos this year. Yeah, they've had all 3-point wins over the last how many games. I'm expecting it to be close as well. I mean, that Broncos defense is super tough. The offense is good too, but I just need Jordan Love to go out there, throw some deep passes to Christian Watson, because I love him, and hopefully we pull one out.
And that gets us to Gray.
I'm going to borrow from the Bears again. The Packers basically need to do what the Bears have been doing for most of the season in order to pull this off. The Broncos defense is third in yards per game, fourth in points per game, second in run defense, and only 13 passing touchdowns allowed total so far this season. That puts them right near the top of the league in that mark. But here's the thing. Nix has been, like you guys pointed out, Conrad, a lot of comeback and late action kind of victories. He's making mistakes earlier in games, and the longevity of the team is having a lot to do, especially when you're playing in Denver. So basically, I think the Packers defense has to capitalize on early Bo Nix mistakes by converting turnovers. The offense must score points on those extra possessions. It can't be one of those Carolina games where they only touch the ball 8 times and punt it 3 of those. That's a loss. And we can't ignore that they're playing in Denver, which just outright terrifies me. I have the Broncos here by 3 or so. I'm scared. I'm a scared little boy, quaking in my boots on this one.
We're expecting a rock fight tomorrow in Denver. Coming up next, going to shift back to the Badgers conversation. Jake Kokorowski of Badger Observer. This is Make the Call on the Civic Media Sports Network.
Yo, You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
As you heard the big voice guy there, it is Make the Call here, all the Civic Media sports empire around the state. I'm Jimmy Cuska, and in this segment, we take a pause from our roundtable, and we are joined right now by Jake Kokorowski of Badger Observer, badgerobserver.com. We can find his work covering all the things we're about to talk about. I want to start on a positive note, Jake, because I think there's enough negativity in the world right now, and we need to focus on something positive. So let's focus on some positive. Badgers volleyball, shocker, good again as they advance. They defeat Stanford 3-1, and they'll play tomorrow in the NCAA volleyball tournament.
Yeah, it came out to be, I mean, they have a rematch now against Texas coming up tomorrow. It's going to be, I mean, this is obviously the Longhorns beat Wisconsin. They swept Wisconsin at the Kohl Center on August 31st. So it's going to be big for Wisconsin to they have a chance. I mean, this is a vastly different team from what we saw against Texas back in late August to start the year. That was the second game, second match of the year. And you've seen this team grow. I mean, this is Wisconsin, for those that don't know, you know, Wisconsin, Kelly Sheffield inherited a team, not inherited, but he brought in a team that 10 new players, you know, five transfers, one's injured now for the rest of the year, and Gracie Lopez. And, you know, they also have five freshmen. And so you've seen this team grow over the course of, you know, the season, over 3 months. And they put together a fantastic contest, a fantastic match against Stanford. Yeah, the offensive onslaught with Wisconsin, for those who don't know, like, for the Badgers are one of the best teams offensively in volleyball this season. Their hitting percentage, you know, top five, I think it's top two, just next to Nebraska. And you've seen Mimi Collier, who's going to be, you know, without a doubt, an All-American. She's already in a unanimous All Big Ten selection. She went off for 27 kills yesterday. Carter Booth, 14 kill, tied a career high with kills, 14 kills there, and didn't have an error. This team just, you know, and Charlie Furbringer is the All-American setter. She's this, you know, career high 61 assists, and she's just passing the ball everywhere. And so this team's really kind of hitting on all cylinders. This is what you want out of a Wisconsin volleyball program, or any volleyball program this time of year, playing your best ball, and they are absolutely doing it.
Let's talk a little football real quick. I know that the season is over for the Badgers, but they did make one coaching change, and that was that offensive line coach. And just seeing all the things that have popped up in just the few days since he was named the new head offensive line coach, it seems like they found somebody who was ready to hit the ground running for the Badgers.
Yeah, Eric Mateos, there's a lot of familiarity with Jeff Grimes and Eric Mateos. Jeff Grimes was the offensive coordinator at BYU and at Baylor. And guess who was his offensive line coach? That was Eric Mateos. And so Mateos comes from Arkansas. This is obviously the Razorbacks did not have a good year this year. They fired their head coach, Sam Pittman. But the offensive line was not a problem. The offense was not a problem for Arkansas. 26th in the FBS in rushing yards per game is over 190 yards. I think it was like 191 yards per game on over five yards per carry. Last season, when Eric Mateos came over in 2024, they had 184 yards rushing on nearly 5 yards per carry. That's music to Wisconsin fans' ears over the last couple of years, and just what's happened with the run game. This run game for Wisconsin averaged under, I think it was 120. I think they averaged under 120 yards per contest on 3.3 yards per carry. Mateos has a great pedigree. And very high, I think very highly thought of from all indications. And, you know, he already talked to Brady Beckenhuis, who's the lone 2026 offensive line signee. Talked to Brady Beckenhuis just a couple days ago. The article's up today yesterday, on Badger Observer, to talk about, just, you know, get some initial thoughts from one of the newest Badgers there. But it's hard too, right? Because I didn't think AJ Blazek did a bad job with what he was given. And then AJ Blazek's, you know, very highly regarded within the state with high school coaches and others, just very good dynamic personality, catered his teaching to others, to just different skill sets and different personalities within the offensive line room. But it's also tough too, where it is just how college football is, where it's not fair. And just how things go. I mean, he's a great recruiter as well. It's you know, the results this year. You also take a look at what Mateos and having that familiarity with Jeff Grimes, you can see how that move was made. It's going to be definitely interesting watching, just because I think the things to watch is not just with the transfer portal going on and who they could bring in with the transfer portal or who may leave. I think it's also recruiting wise is, you know, Wisconsin's got a lot of 2027 offensive linemen recruits within the state. How quickly does Mateos talk to a Cole Ryder from Germantown, a Hunter Malinger and Reese Malinger from Sussex Hamilton? And they already have one commit, of course, the son of Wisconsin athletic director Chris McIntosh. That's Ethan McIntosh out of Verona. So those are going to be interesting storylines going forward.
Talking to Jake Kokorowski of Badger Observer. Last thought for you, and I know we talked about staying positive, but men's basketball, unfortunately, has taken a little bit of a beating on social media, especially after the loss to Nebraska earlier this week, where Wisconsin lost by 30 points to Nebraska ball. It was not a great defensive effort, and Coach Greg Gard said as much. They don't play again until next Friday when they take on Villanova in that game at Fiserv Forum. But, Wisconsin basketball, are they about where we expect? What is our take on them here with about a minute to go?
There's a lot of hype with this team with bringing in transfers like Nick Boyd and Austin Rapp and Andrew Rohde, a very talented starting core. But I also think right now it's the one thing that's, I think offensively, they're kind of as expected. You want a little bit more inside out game. You want them to get more two pointers. They're shooting a lot of threes right now. So I'd say you want them getting a little bit more physical down low, and not just, it can't just be Nolan Winner all the time down low. That way we need to see more Austin Rapp or Will Garlock or Alexis Bielaskis, who's the, freshman from overseas. So no, you have these guys, you need more of that defensively. They need to get better. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is, like, you know, you've seen this team when they're on, they're really good. You saw what they did against Marquette just a week or so ago. But you also saw now what happened against Nebraska on the road. They do need to get some things fixed, and they've had over a week now. They will have over a week when they face Villanova to make the adjustments, especially with, three games from now, they have to face Purdue at home. That's going to be quite the matchup for the Badgers.
You can find Jay Kokorowski's work at BadgerObserver.com. You can also find him on Twitter or any social media. Just look for Jay Coco. Thank you for your time, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week ahead of the holidays.
Thanks, Jenny. Appreciate you.
We're back to the roundtable right after this. You're listening to Make the Call here on the Civic Media Sports Network.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
As the big voice guy said, make the call here on the Civic Media Sports Network. Big thanks to Jay Kokorowski in the previous segment for talking Badgers. We're going to talk Packers to start in this segment. We welcome back the roundtable of Parker, Gray, and Conrad as we'll go around the state and get their takes on what we believe to be the biggest sports story of the weekend. And I think it's pretty clear that the Packers are first and foremost right now. Now that the Badgers are kind of on a break in basketball, we talked about volleyball and where they're at, of course, with Wisconsin. The Bucks in December, they've got some important games coming up without Giannis, and of course, all of the offseason stuff in the other sports. But I really think we're locked into where the Packers and what they're doing, and that's where I'm going to start you guys off here in our roundtable segment, and that's talking about the Packers. So they play Denver tomorrow. They have a string of at least three games in a row, which are, even though the Broncos game isn't technically primetime, it is a later afternoon game, and pretty much everybody in the country is going to see it. Then it'll be followed by a couple of primetime Saturday games against Chicago and Baltimore on Saturdays in coming weeks. So a week from tonight, they'll actually play Chicago again. And then 2 weeks from tonight, they'll play Baltimore. But tomorrow at 3:25, it is the Denver Broncos. And this is a team that has played in a lot of low scoring games. The Packers have, as well as of late, have played in some low scoring games. And I feel like in those games, everything gets a lot more stressful because every single possession matters so much. And the Packers have made some interesting decisions down the stretch in some of these close games this year, trying to see if they can keep the momentum going against maybe the best team that they'll have seen in quite some time in the Denver Broncos. So I'm going to start you with this. The importance of possessions in the Packers in these low-scoring games. I really feel like for the Packers that if they're going to have success in a game like this, that they're going to have to minimize all their mistakes. It's a football cliche, but I just think in a lower-scoring game with how much each possession matters, maybe even getting fewer possessions in a game when you expect it to be a bit shorter against a good team like Denver. I just feel like that part of it is going to be amplified and that the stress level for all of us is going to be so much higher with every single time the Packers have the ball tomorrow. I'm going to start you there. What do you guys think about just the importance of possessions of the Packers against the Broncos tomorrow and what should be and what we expect to be sort of a lower scoring game? We'll start with you guys here.
Scoring percentage, I think, is kind of showing to be the lifeblood of it's kind of the live by it or die by it kind of thing, because there's been drives fizzling out not as field goals but as punts, and when that's happening, then you've got to be scoring the touchdowns in the first place or you end up losing the game. If you want an example of what it can look like when that goes wrong, when a penalty or two or three really stymie the few possessions that you're limited in because of the other team, the Carolina game, the Packers were limited to their possessions because Carolina controlled the ball well, ran it especially well in key moments, converted third down by run, ran the clock. And when the other teams got the reins like that, well, you can't both hold them at the same time. I'm curious what you guys think about Green Bay's chances in Denver. I'm nervous about the whole in Denver thing, but for me, it comes down to Josh Jacobs. If he's there, okay, I'm a lot more confident. It's not suddenly a freebie, but what do you guys think the complexion of the game looks like without Jacobs if he's not there? Conrad, I know you're a Josh Jacobs fan. What do you think Wilson can do the job?
You know, I mean, we saw when he took over the reins that when Josh Jacobs was out, and he played pretty well, but it wasn't against this top tier of Broncos defense. But one thing I do like that's going on right now is Matt LaFleur is letting Jordan just air it out. And I love that because we do have some threats downfield. And, you know, even Luke Musgrave, sometimes you just randomly be down there and he'll grab a ball. So, I mean, it's not just the run game. I think that we can make it work. Airing it out, getting some completions in the middle of the field as well. It's going to be a toss or a tough matchup, but it's going to be a fun watch.
I actually really wanted to hear more about that, Gray, because I was wondering too about if the Packers do end up having issues with Josh Jacobs with that knee, because who knows, he hasn't practiced all week. How much can you really expect from a guy when he hasn't played in 7 days to show up on Sunday? Gray, do you think that if necessary, the Packers, if they have to lean into that passing game, are they going to have enough to get through that Broncos defense?
Oh, boy, you're asking me to predict the future. It's the thing that I have to struggle with. It's the reason that I'll never be a highly paid, nice haircut talking head on camera, because I refuse to pretend that I know one way or the other. That said, even I recognize that that's just a horrifying answer. So I think it's possible, but they've got to play such a clean game. And I don't know if we've seen Green Bay do what they would need to do against a team of that caliber. I go back again, got to go back to references, go with what we know. And I start thinking about that Cleveland game where if the offense isn't producing, that we haven't won a defensive we haven't won a shootout or a slap fight. When we're evenly matched with a team, that either looks like Cleveland, a loss, or it looks like Dallas, a tie. And no, that doesn't mean that's exactly what we're going to see again in similar situations. But look, Green Bay and Denver are two high power teams. I think it all comes down to that recipe I mentioned earlier in the show. If the Packers can capitalize on early Bo Nix mistakes, I think we'll see that momentum is real again. I'm so worried about Josh.
I want to throw this out there because Broncos defense has got 55 sacks. Kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Yep.
Jordan Love has been very, very good against the blitz, right? I don't have the stats. I'm sure that you do. Let's be your spreadsheets there, Gray. I assume that Jordan Love is the best quarterback in the league when he's under pressure. Is that something that we can expect? Is he going to rise to the occasion in this game? Or do we see this is just too much and he's going to get dragged to the deep end?
That's a brilliant question. I think it's the right one to be asking too. And for the record, no, I actually don't have the against the blitz stats. I know that he's been at or near the top. I know like last week, for example, it was extremely lauded that I think he was extremely good last week against the blitz, and that's not new this season. That said, whether he's able to execute the blitz against the blitz is only half of the equation, because he needs opportunities to be created by the pass catchers. There needs to be someone with separation or who's apparently going to get separation. That's the one thing. Jordan Love is blessed with anticipation, an And if you can't throw with anticipation in the NFL, well, ask JJ McCarthy. It doesn't look good. It doesn't work whatsoever. So that's the real answer. How are the receivers looking? As far as the injury carousel goes, there's one fewer receiver on the injury report this week than in weeks past, but there's still four. There's still four. And by the way, as long as we're talking injury report, five defensive linemen on the injury report. I believe it was on Thursday. It's just the level of banged up is just terrifying. Yes, I think it's possible, but there can't be mistakes. If you see multiple drives with multiple penalties, I think you're going to see Packers fans leaving early.
First of all, I just got to give a shout out to JJ McCarthy for last week. He played very well. I think he heard us when we were talking smack about him. So good for him, bud.
Everybody else was.
I'm going to say, Jordan Love needs to throw the ball away sometimes. All right. Taking the sack and minus 15 yards, like last week against the Bears, that happened to him again. Games before that, can you throw the ball away, please? I'm screaming at my TV, throw the ball away. But other than that, like you said, he's playing great against the Blitz, too. He's throwing very well. And I think that he could throw some dimes against the Broncos defense.
I agree. That was his fourth pick last week. That was it. So throw it away more, yes. But the level of safety he's pulling off with the deep ball still showing up all the time, I love that blend. Parker, I'm sorry I cut you off a little bit there.
No, you're totally good. I was just going to say, I think, Conrad, you were already talking about him, Christian Watson. I think that he might just have the game of his life because they might just need to say, you know what, heck, he's down there somewhere and just huck him up to him. I think that this could be a big game, especially as the Packers are, let's be honest, this will be a statement win for the Packers. I think that this could be the game where obviously they're already up at the top of the league and people know who they are. But I think that you might turn some heads this week with a win going into Denver, getting the first win against the Broncos in Mile High.
That would be my combination of things. Spreading the ball around comfortably without throwing quickly. Like if Jordan has an extra second and he can get it to people, if Bo Melton scores another 60-yard touchdown, I'm going to be a relaxed Packer fan watching on Sunday. Yeah, that was the meme that I saw was, you just let Bo Melton score. And I thought that's the right vibe. And now I've cut you both off. Conrad, what were you going for there?
Well, I was going to talk about Bo Melton too. I mean, he's the best, he's better than Travis Hunter,
he's the best
two-way player right
ever,
now.
Yeah, he's the best cornerback five who's ever played receiver. Like, was that whole offseason thing a fake out or an emergency prep? Yeah,
Has he been on the defensive side of the ball yet? I don't know if
zero I snap.
Zero times.
Zero snaps. Okay. He's been, I think, on the field for 56 snaps all on offense. 100% so far. Huh?
You learn slowly.
And so we reiterate, Chicago, you just let Bo Melton score. My guys.
You know, since Christian Watson's been back, I don't know if it's just me. I don't look at stats a lot for Packer games, but what about Romeo Doubs, like his production value compared to when Christian Watson was out to now? I don't feel like I see him that often now.
I was going to say literally the same thing. I feel like I haven't seen much of Doubs in maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And now, Gray, I'm cutting you off. You go.
No, not to worry. I'm sorry. I gotta learn to yield. Apparently I need to be re-drivers educated here. First downs. Romeo Doubs is a first down machine, and he's a possession receiver. So you're not going to see any splash plays. He's not going to show up in general. He was more noticeable earlier in the season because there was nobody making the splash plays that Christian Watson is making now, aside from Tucker Kraft. And in between, there was a little bit of a gap where Romeo was the only one consistently producing. Now you've got Jaden Reed out there too. Whether or not we get Matthew Golden this season in ship shape, there's too many people out there to notice that Romeo is still quietly leading the team. Remember all those categories that Tucker Kraft is second in: targets, receptions, and yards. It's Romeo right there at the top of the list. So I expect that to be the same at the end of the season, unless Watson just continues to go off. Watson leads in that one key category, 20 plus yard catches, and it's not even close. Tucker is second in that category, and there's actually somebody actively working to get past him. So we're finally going to get to a point as of these next couple weeks where Tucker can fade out. Romeo needs to have a consistent game. We need two or three huge downfield throws, whether that's to Watson or whether it's to, heck, Dontavian Wicks had a great game a couple weeks ago. So there again, injury becomes relevant. It's all such a complex web. Injuries, does Micah get home? Does Nixon get penalized when he's the one who was assaulted on the field? I mean, like, the game has to be kept clean. And God, please give us Josh Jacobs. That's all I want for Christmas.
You know, I was going to say, last week, how do we feel about Micah Parsons last week? I thought he played pretty well. Some pretty good pressure. He was getting held a bunch. I mean, pretty much a chokehold on one that they showed on the screen. But what do you guys think about Micah Parsons last week?
I love him, and I will stick with the fact that if he's not getting sacks, that does not matter because of how much attention he draws. He needs to draw a hold, though. Come on, NFL.
I want to follow up on that point, Parker, because there was a very specific play that happened where they faked him rushing off the edge and they dropped him in the coverage, and it allowed the whole offensive line shifted thinking he was coming off the edge. It allowed like four guys to come free and chase the quarterback out of the pocket. So he has impacts even when he's not actually in the backfield.
Absolutely. That's a lot of the time the impact of a good pass rusher. I mean, you want to see, I believe it was it Gilbert Brown's best season? It had a lot to do with how well Reggie White was doing. You know, it's always the cumulative effort, if you will. I had something. I did a little bit of research about those holding calls, and I heard it from the Wild and Tausch podcast. They were talking about how oftentimes pass rushers have a bit of a choice because in order to sell the holding call, in order to make it clear to the refs that you're being penalized, if you will, I think you get me there, you've got to let that offensive lineman win. You got to let him either tackle you or you got to let him carry you away from the play, or the penalty's not clear enough. Or even then, sometimes it was never explicitly said in my research, but the refs are kind of making judgment calls like, okay, did that actually impede a proper rush? Like, yeah, it was a penalty, but is that a flag? Those are different things sometimes. And it just, yeah, Mike is too good. And like he said, it comes with the price tag. I'm glad he's got the right mentality about it. I'd rather he fought through it than give up and sell it. Apparently Za'Darius Smith is a good example of one who could sell it well. And I mean, I wouldn't mind having Za'Darius in his prime on the other side. I'll keep Rashawn though. Even quiet.
Packers have something going there on the defensive side. And I think Micah Parsons coming over, you get an all-world, all-time talent like that. I really just kind of gifted to you. I know that, you know, one name we haven't mentioned at all on any of these Saturday shows has been Kenny Clark. We haven't mentioned him at all this year because Micah Parsons has, I think, really done what everybody expected him to do. And every time he lines up on a snap, you know exactly where number one is. And you see him very clearly once he gets out there, just the impact he has and folding the half of the line that he's on and all the attention that he draws and frees up for everybody else. But we have run out of time for our roundtable segment. I appreciate all of you guys as always going through everything. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you again here in a week.
Thanks, Jimmy.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks, Jimmy. See you guys.
We'll have more coming up on Make the Call here, part of the Civic Media Sports Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Welcome back here to Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Sports Network. I'm Jimmy Cuska, taking you in through this final segment before we hand it off to Mike Clemens for the final word on all the sports coming up this weekend. The highlight of the weekend for me is happening at 2 o'clock today. It is the NCAA Division III quarterfinals, the Elite Eight, if you will, as it will be UW River Falls taking on Wheaton. So River Falls won the first two Culver's Isthmus Bowls back 5 and 4 years ago, and then Wheaton won the game last year in the fourth Isthmus Bowl. So River Falls was the first and second champion, and Wheaton was the fourth champion. And Wheaton's roster from last year carries over quite a few of the same guys, including quarterback Mark Forsucci, who's leading a tremendous offense for Wheaton into this game. I fully expect that there's going to be a ton of points scored in this, and not just because of the quarterbacks, although the quarterbacks matter a whole heck of a lot. As you look at River Falls and Caleb Blaha, he's going to be the difference maker, I think, not only in this game, but just really across the nation this week. It's a really, really good matchup for college football, and it's happening on a day where the high temperature is expected to be -1 in River Falls. Wind chills -20 to -30 throughout the game. In fact, after sunset, which happens sometime in the third or fourth quarter, the temperatures are expected to drop into the low negative single digits in this game. So you're talking about a game that's going to be very, very cold, but still a chance for either of these teams to move on to the Final Four in college football. And for Wheaton, a team that is that has finished behind North Central in the CCIW for the last several years, you know, a chance for them coming back into the playoffs to make a deep run, I think just shows a lot about the resilience of that program. And for River Falls in their first playoff appearance since 1996 to take it all the way to this point as conference champions in the WIAC, I think it's just remarkable. What a great story. That game again is at 2 o'clock today in River Falls. You can watch it on ESPN+. Thanks to Parker, Conrad, and Gray, as well as Jake for their time today. Thank you for listening, and have a great weekend, everybody.
An exciting win for Wisconsin. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. In women's college volleyball, the Badgers beat Sanford 3-1 at the NCAA tournament in Austin, Texas, to advance tomorrow to the Elite Eight. How did Wisconsin have the confidence to eliminate the second highest ranked team in the country, Stanford? The Badgers' Charlie Furbringer.
Yeah, I think we also had just a lot of trust in one another. I mean, I know for me, if one of our hitters got blocked or made an error, they were right back in the huddle saying, got you, next ball. So I think we're just moving on super quickly, and that allowed us to hit as high as we did.
Stanford tied the match up at one set apiece.
We knew that that was going to be the case, that it was just going to be two teams that were dropping their gloves and just going at it. So the second set didn't surprise us. You've got to be able to respond to keep moving forward without panicking.
That's Badgers head coach Kelly Sheffield. They'll play Texas tomorrow afternoon. The winner of that match will advance to the NCAA Final Four. Men's college basketball. It was one of the worst losses in recent Badgers history. Wisconsin traveled to Lincoln this week and played number 23 ranked Nebraska, losing 90-60. The Cornhuskers remain undefeated at 10-0. They're off to their hottest start since 1977. The Badgers fall to 7-3. And after the game, a very frustrated head coach, Greg Gard, was asked where was their defense after losing in Lincoln by 30 points.
We haven't had a defensive identity all year. Everybody gets all rah-rah about our offense, but it's the other end of the floor that's caused us the trouble. And obviously tonight it was credit to Nebraska. They beat us every way possible. There's not another facet in the game of basketball that they couldn't kick our rear end with. They did it all.
The Badgers now have some time off. They host Villanova next Friday night at the Kohl Center in Madison. NBA, the Bucks bounced back with a 116-101 win over the Boston Celtics on Thursday night in Milwaukee. After a few days off earlier in the week, Bucks head coach Doc Rivers says they made some adjustments to their offense and it worked.
One of the things we talked to you guys about going in the break was correcting our spacing. I thought we had room. Guys wasn't in the wrong spots. When a guard drove, he knew where the other guy was at. I thought we played a very organized basketball game tonight.
So the Bucks are now 11-15. They head to Brooklyn to play the Nets 5 p.m. tomorrow night. NFL, the Packers and the Broncos in Denver kick off tomorrow afternoon at 3:25. Although the Broncos are 11-2 and have won 10 games in a row, head coach Sean Payton was asked why does he think his team is 2.5-point underdogs to Green Bay.
Look, we know we're playing a good football team, and so that's something that we have no control over. Look, we've got four tough opponents the next 4 weeks. Three of the four of them are at home. You know, we're counting on our crowd this week, not just at the line of scrimmage, but while they're in the huddle. You know, I go back to a few weeks ago. That communication that exists from the opponent when they're in the huddle, you'd be surprised. When some teams' stadiums have it figured out, the quarterback to the group in the huddle, if that it all gets blurry, you have problems. And I thought our game, our last home game with Kansas City, was significant, and I'm counting on it being even at a higher level. So, yeah, we're playing a good team.
The Broncos have a great defense. They have led the league with 55 quarterback sacks, and they're tough on third down. The Packers on offense right now convert the most on third down, so who comes out on top? I asked Matt LaFleur.
I don't know what the analytics say in regards to what our average third down. I do feel like we've, for the most part, have done a pretty decent job of staying in third and manageable situations. And conversely, when you look at Denver, I mean, there's so many third and longs on tape. I mean, it's crazy how many times people get behind the sticks versus them, and it's a credit to the talent and the scheme. They do a good job of forcing you into those third and longs, and I think that's going to be one of the keys to the game, is just trying to stay in front of the sticks a little bit.
Denver's won a lot of games in the fourth quarter this year, right?
They had nine. I want to say it's 9 out of their 11 wins have been comeback victories in the fourth quarter. So I think that's another key, is you got to you're going to have to play a full 60 potentially plus minutes against this football team, and really in all three phases.
I mean, is that something you talk about in your meetings too?
That's definitely a talking point. Point of emphasis, I would say, is just you can't let up. I mean, these guys have been down, and whether it's Philly or the Giants, and just fought back and found a way. I think it was 20-0 or 19-0 in the Giants game, or 22. I can't remember what it was, but I mean, they were way down and they battled back, and until it's a resilient football team. Obviously, they got a ton of talent in every phase of it, and they got a bunch of great coaches. So they're never out of the fight.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. I'll have reports all weekend from Denver with Sports on Mike Clemens.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.